Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in the book of Turkish folklore written down by Ignaz Kunyos. This story is about a prince in need of a princess, and the adventures he has in getting her. Also, it has the guy with the balls of day and night, the same as the last Armenian story. A listener said that they might be related, and here's a very similar story. Okay, man, it's a long one. Let's begin. The Storm Fiend. Two cats made a spring. The frog flew with its wings. Aunt Flea fell down, and the rocks fell on her. The cock was an imam, the cow a barber. The goslings danced. All this happened at the time when the padishah was very old. This old padishah had three sons and three daughters. One day he was taken ill, and in spite of all the hojas and physicians that surrounded him, his condition failed to improve. He sent for all his sons and spoke to them thus, "When I am dead, the one who keeps watch by my grave for three nights shall be padishah. As for my daughters, give them in marriage to the first who asks for them." He died and was buried with all the pomp and ceremony suitable to his highest station. In order that the kingdom might not remain long without a padishah, the eldest son went to his father's grave, spread his carpet, and prayed thereon till midnight, and then waited patiently for the dawn. But suddenly a fearful noise broke the darkness. The youth, appalled, took to his heels and ran home without stopping. The next night the second son went to the tomb and sat there until midnight. But as before, a fearful noise arose, and he ran back home as fast as his legs could carry him. Now came the turn of the youngest. He took up his hanchar, put it in his girdle, and went about the cemetery. About midnight arose such a tremendous noise that the heavens and earth appeared to be shaken by it. The youth proceeded in the direction of the sound and came to the presence of an immense dragon. Drawing his dagger, he plunged it into the dragon with all his might. The monster had hardly sufficient strength left to cry out, "If you are the right man, stab me once more."
"Not I," answered the prince.
The dragon accordingly expired. The prince wished to cut off his ears and nose, but he could not see them in the darkness. And as he was groping, he noticed a light in the distance. He walked in the direction of the light, and as he approached, he saw an old man in the corner. This man had two balls of twine in his hand, a black one and a white one. The black one he was winding up, and the white one he allowed to roll onto the ground.
"What are you doing, father?" asked the prince.
"It is my occupation, my son. I wind up the night and set the day rolling."
The prince rejoined, "My occupation is more difficult than yours, father." Saying this, he bound the old man, so that he could no longer let loose the day, and went on to seek a light. Presently, he arrived at a castle, under whose walls he found 40 men holding a council.
"What are you about?" asked the prince.
"We want to get into the castle and rob it," was the answer.
"But we know not how to accomplish it."
"I will help you," said the prince, "if you give me a light."
The robbers promised quite willingly. He took nails and knocked them into the wall, from the ground up to the roof, and climbed thereby, and called down that each man should come up singly. As they ascended one by one, the youth at the top struck off their heads and threw their bodies into the courtyard, until he had destroyed all the 40 thieves. This done, he entered the castle, in the courtyard, which was a magnificent palace. Opening the door, he saw a snake coiled around a column by the side of the staircase. He thrust it through with his sword, but quite forgot to withdraw the weapon, so that it was left sticking in the creature's body. Mounting the stairs, he entered a chamber, where he found a beautiful maiden asleep. Closing the door, he looked into another chamber and found another maiden more beautiful than the first. Closing this door also, he went to a third chamber, which was completely covered with metals. Here, a beautiful maiden was sleeping, one so charming that he fell in love with her 1,000 times. Now he closed this door too, climbed the castle wall, and descended the other side by the means of the nails. Then he went straight to the old greybeard, whom he had bound.
"My son," cried the elderly man before the youth came up to him, Why have you been away so long? My ribs are aching from my long bondage.
The youth set him free, and the old man let the white ball roll farther. The youth returned to the dragon, cut off his ears and nose, and put them in his pocket. He now returned home to the palace, where in the meantime his eldest brother had been made the Padisha. Of his adventure he said nothing, but let things take their course. Sometime afterwards, a lion came to the palace and appeared before the Padisha, who asked him what he wanted.
"To marry your eldest sister," answered the lion.
"I cannot give her to a beast," said the Padisha. And the lion would have been sent away if the youngest prince had not observed, "Our father laid it upon us that she was to be given to the first who should ask for her." On this he took the maiden by the hand and delivered her to the lion, who went away with her. Next day a tiger came and demanded the Padisha's second sister. The two elder brothers were unwilling to give her to him, but the youngest challenged them to fulfill their father's wish, and the maiden was accordingly given to the tiger. On the third day a bird flew into the palace and requested the youngest princess. The Padisha and his brother again would not consent, but the youngest insisted, and in the end the bird flew off with the maiden. The bird was the Padisha of the Peris, an emerald Anka. Now we will return to the castle. Here there was another Padisha who had three daughters. Going out early in the morning, he perceived that someone had been in the palace. He passed into the courtyard and near the staircase spied the huge snake, and with his sword cut it in two. Proceeding further, he saw the 40 corpses. "No enemy could have done this, but a friend," he mused. "He has delivered us from the robbers and the snake. This sword belongs to our good friend, but where is he?" He took counsel on the matter with his Lala. "We can only find out," said the vizier, "if we prepare a great feast and invite everybody to partake of it. We must watch all of our guests very closely, and whoever carries the sheath belonging to the sword is our friend." So the Padisha gave orders for the feast to be prepared, and everybody invited thereto. The feasting lasted 40 days and 40 nights, and one day the Lala said, "Everybody has come to the feast, except the three princes." Accordingly, they were sent for, and when they came, it was noticed that the youngest had the sheath belonging to the sword. Immediately the Padisha sent for him and said, "You have rendered me a valuable service. What may I give you in return?" "Nothing less," answered the prince, "than your youngest daughter."
"Woe is me, my son! If only you had not asked for her," sighed the Padisha. "My crown, my kingdom are yours, but do not ask for this maiden."
"If you will give me the maiden, I will accept her," answered the prince. "Otherwise, I want nothing."
"My son," implored the Padisha in great sorrow, "I will give you my eldest daughter, I will give you my second daughter, but I dare not part from my youngest daughter. The storm fiend demanded her in marriage, and as I would not give her to him, I have been compelled to secure her in the metal chamber so that this dew cannot get near her. This storm fiend is so powerful that no cannon can injure him, no eye can perceive him. Like the wind he appears, and like the wind he disappears."
In vain the Padisha urged the youth to dismiss the youngest princess from his mind, and thereby keep himself out of danger. The prince would not listen. Seeing that his reasoning was useless, and at length growing weary of the matter, the Padisha withdrew his objections, and the marriage took place. The two brothers married the two other maidens and went back to their own country, while the youngest remained, in order to protect his wife from the evil machinations of the dew. Thus the prince lived happily with his beautiful wife for some time. One day he said to her, "My dear one, it is a long time since I went from your side. I would like to go for a hunting for one brief hour."
"Oh, woe, my king," she answered. "I know only too well that if you leave me, you will never see me again."
But at length she yielded. He took his weapons and went into the forest. The storm fiend now had the opportunity he had long awaited. He was afraid of the brave prince and dared not take the princess from his side. But no sooner had the prince left the palace than the storm fiend entered and carried off the girl. Shortly afterwards, the prince returned home and missed his wife. He hastened to the Padisha, but the dew had stolen his wife, and she was nowhere to be found. He wept and lamented bitterly, casting himself to the earth. Then he arose, mounted his steed, and went forth resolving to rescue his wife or die in the attempt. He wandered without resting for days and weeks, his sore affliction spurring him ever onwards. At length he saw a palace, but so faintly that he could barely claim to see it. This was the palace of his eldest sister. The princess was looking out of the window and wondering at the sight of a human being in her locality, where no bird ever flew or caravan came. She recognized her brother, and when they met, so great was their joy that they could not speak for kissing and embracing. In the evening, the princess said to the prince, "Soon my husband the lion will be here. Although he treats me well, he is after all a beast and may do you harm." So she hid her brother. When the lion came home, the princess and he sat together and conversed, and she asked the lion what he would do if one of her brothers should come there. "If the eldest came," answered her husband, "I would kill him at a blow. If the second came, I would also kill him. But if the youngest came, I would take him into my arms and lull him to sleep." "That one has arrived," answered his wife. "Then bring him here quickly, so that I may see him," cried the lion. And when the prince stood before them, the lion was so happy that he did not know what to do. He inquired when he came and where he went. The youth now related what had happened to him, and said he was going to find the storm fiend. "I know him only by name," said the lion, "but I counsel you to have nothing to do with him, for you can do no good." But the prince was restless. He would remain only one night, and on the following morning mounted his horse and set out. The lion accompanied him a short distance to put him on the right road, but then they both went different ways. The prince traveled onward till he came to another palace, which belonged to his second sister. She spied a man coming along the road, and no sooner recognized her brother than she ran out to meet him and led him into the palace. The hours sped happily until towards evening the princess observed, "My tiger husband will soon be here. I will hide you so that no harm will befall you." So she hid her brother. In the evening the tiger came home, and his wife asked him what he would do if by chance one of her brothers should come to see them.
"The two eldest I would kill," said the tiger.
"But if the youngest came, I would rock him to sleep on my knees." So the princess fetched the prince her brother, and the tiger manifested great joy at seeing him. The youth related the story of his bereavement, and asked the tiger if he knew of the storm fiend.
"By name only," answered the tiger, and he also begged the youth to renounce such a dangerous quest.
But at daybreak, the prince set forth again. The tiger put him on the right road, and they parted company. Crossing a desert, he saw something looming in the dark distance. Wondering what it might be, he proceeded ahead and by perceived that it was a palace, the home of his youngest sister. The princess glanced through the window and uttered a joyful cry, "Oh, my brother!" His arrival gave great happiness. He rejoiced to have seen all three of his sisters, but he thought of his wife and his heart was heavy with grief. Towards evening, the princess said to her brother, "My bird husband will be here soon. I will hide you until I have ascertained how he is disposed to receive you." So she hid her brother. With loud flapping wings, the Anka flew in, and he had hardly rested before his wife asked him what he would do if one of her brothers should visit them. "The two eldest," said the bird, "I would take up in my beak, fly with them up to the sky, and drop them to the earth. But the youngest, I would take him on my wings and let him go to sleep." At this, the princess called in her brother. "My dear child," exclaimed the bird, "how did you come here? Did you have no fear on the road?" The youth told his grief and requested the Anka to take him to the storm fiend. "That is not so easily done," answered the bird. "But if you should encounter him, you would gain so little thereby that it would be better to remain with us and relinquish your purpose." "No," said the resolute prince. "Either I deliver my wife, or I perish in the attempt." Seeing he could not be turned from his purpose, the Anka described the way to the palace of the storm fiend. "Just now he sleeps, and you can take away your wife," he said. "But if he awakes and sees you, all is over. You cannot see him, for no eye can behold him, no sword can harm him, so beware." Next day the youth set out, and soon came in sight of an immense palace, which had neither doors nor chimneys. It was the house of the storm fiend. His wife was sitting by the window,
and on seeing him sprang down crying, "Whoa, my sultan!"
The prince embraced her, and of his joy and her tears there was no end, until the princess remembered the cruel dew.
"He fell asleep 3 days ago," she said. "Let us hasten away from here before his 40 days sleep is over."
She also mounted a horse, and they sped away quickly. They had not traveled far, however, before the 40th day expired, and the storm fiend awoke. He went to the princess's chamber and called her to open the door, so that he might see her face for an instant. Receiving no answer, he suspected evil, and forcing the door open, found that there was no princess there.
"So, Prince Mohammed, you have been here and carried off the sultan's daughter. But wait a while, I'll soon catch you both."
Saying these words, he calmly sat down, drank coffee, and smoked his pipe. Then he got up and hurried after them. Without stopping to rest, the prince and princess galloped onward. But presently, the latter felt the wind raised by the dew and said, "Oh, my king, woe is me, the storm fiend is here." The invisible monster fell upon them, seizing the youth, and broke his arms and legs, and smashed his head and bones, leaving not a single member whole. "As you have killed him, allow me at least to collect his bones and put them in a sack," the princess tearfully implored the fiend. "I may perhaps find someone to bury them." The dew, offering no objection, the princess put the prince's bones in a sack. Then she kissed his horse on the eyes and bound the sack on his back and whispered in his ear, "My horse, take these bones to the right place." The dew carried the princess back to his palace, but the power of her beauty was so great that the fiend was like a prisoner in her hands. She refused to allow the monster in her presence. He dared show himself only before the door of her chamber. In the meantime, the horse galloped away with the youth's bones and stopped before the palace of the youngest sister, where he neighed so loudly that the princess came out to see what was the matter. On seeing the sack and her brother's bones, she began to weep bitterly and cast herself violently to the earth as though she would break her own bones. She could hardly contain herself until the return of her husband, the Anka. With loud flapping wings, the bird Padishah, the emerald Anka, came home. And when he saw the poor prince's broken bones, he called all his subjects, all of the birds of the world, together and asked, "Which of you was ever in the Garden of Eden?"
"An old wise owl was once there," was the answer. "But now he is so aged and infirm that he can scarcely move."
The Anka dispatched a bird with orders to bring the owl. So the bird flew away and presently returned with the old owl on his back.
"Hey, father, were you ever in the Garden of Eden?" inquired the Padishah.
"Yes, my son," hooted the ancient one, "but it was a long, long time ago, before I was 12 years old. I have never been there since."
"As you have been there once," said the Anka, "go there a second time and bring me a small vial of water."
The owl protested that he could not go. The way was so very long, and he had hardly any strength left, but his excuses were in vain. The Padishah sent him on the back of a bird, so that they flew to the Garden of Eden, procured the water, and returned to the nest. Then the Anka took the youth's bones and began to put them together, the arms, the legs, the head, the thighs, everything put in its proper place, and sprinkled them with the water of paradise. The youth began to yawn, as though he was just awakening from sleep. He looked around and asked the Anka where he was and where his wife was.
"Did I not tell you," said the Anka, "that the storm fiend would catch you? He broke your bones, which we have found in a sack. Now let him alone, or next time he will not even leave your bones in a sack."
But the prince was unwilling to abandon his purpose, and once more he set out to find his wife.
"You must have her at any cost," advised the Anka. "Go first and ask your wife to find out what the dew's talisman is. If you can discover that, the power of the storm fiend can be destroyed."
So the prince, mounting his steed once more, hastened to the palace of the fiend. And as he was asleep, the prince was able to speak to his wife. In great joy, the princess promised to discover the dew's talisman, saying that she would even use flattery if no other means were served. The prince hid himself in a neighboring mountain to await the result. When the storm fiend awoke from sleep at the end of 40 days, he went to the princess's apartment and knocked at the door.
Get out of my sight, cried the maiden from within. You slept for 40 days, while I am left alone and weary of my life.
The Dew was happy that she even deigned to speak to him, and asked her joyfully what he could give her to drive away her melancholy.
What can you give me? Retorted the princess. You are only wind yourself.
Perhaps, however, you have a talisman with which I might amuse myself.
Oh, lady, answered the Dew, my talisman is in a far-off country, and is very difficult to reach.
If only there was another man, such as your Mohammed, he might possibly succeed. The princess was now curious about the talisman, and flattered the Dew so much that at length he divulged his secret. He begged her to sit by his side a little. The maiden granted him this favor, and thereby got possession of the history of the Storm Fiend's talisman.
On the surface of the seventh sea, began the Dew, there is a large island. On this island is an ox grazing. In the ox's stomach is a golden cage. In the cage is a little white dove. That little white dove is my talisman.
But how can one get to this island? Asked the Sultan's daughter.
In this way, said the Dew, opposite the palace of the Emerald Anka is a high mountain. On the top of this mountain is a spring. From this spring, 40 seahorses drink once a day. If anyone can be found clever enough to kick one of these horses while it is drinking, he can saddle and mount it, and it will take him anywhere he wishes to go.
Of what use is this talisman to me? Asked the maiden, if I cannot at once get near it.
She drove the Dew out of her chamber and hastened to her husband with the news.
The prince quickly mounted his steed, went back to the palace of his youngest sister, and related the affair to the Anka. Early the next day, the Anka called 5 birds. Take the prince to the spring mountain, he bade them, and wait there till the magic seahorses appear. While they are drinking, catch one of them, strike it, saddle it, and put the prince upon its back before it has time to take its head out of the water. The Anka's subjects picked up the prince and carried him to the spring. As soon as the horses arrived, the birds did exactly as the Anka had ordered them. The prince found himself on the back of the steed, whose first words were,
"What is your command, dear master?"
"On the surface of the seventh sea there is an island. I wish to go there," said Muhammad.
With "Shut your eyes," the prince flew through space. With "Open your eyes," he found himself on the shore of the island.
Alighting from his horse and putting the bridle in his pocket, he went in search of the ox. Strolling about the island, he met a man who asked him how he had got there.
"I have been shipwrecked," answered the prince. "The ship went down, and it was only with great difficulty that I managed to swim here."
"As for me," said the man, "I am in the service of the Storm Fiend, who has an ox here, which I guard day and night. Would you like to be my servant? All you have to do is fill this trough with water every day." The prince availed himself of the opportunity, and was eager to get a glimpse of the ox. The man took him to the stall, and as soon as Mohammed was alone with the animal, he slit its stomach, took out the golden cage, and went with all speed to the shore. Pulling the bridle out of his pocket, he struck the waves therewith, and his horse immediately appeared and carried him to the Storm Fiend's palace. The prince lifted his wife up beside him and ordered, "To the Emerald Anka." They arrived at the Anka's palace just as the Dew awoke from his sleep. Seeing that his princess was gone, he hastened after them. The Sultan's daughter felt the wind of the Dew and knew that he had nearly overtaken them. At this crisis, the magic horse cried out to them to cut off the head of the dove which was in the cage. They had just enough time to do it. A moment more, and it would have been too late. The wind suddenly ceased, for the fiend was now destroyed. Full of joy, they entered the palace of the Anka, released the magic horse, and left it to rest. Next day they went to the second sister, and on the third day the third sister. The prince now made the pleasing discovery that his lion brother-in-law was the king of the lions, and his tiger brother-in-law was the king of the tigers. Finally, they came to the princess's own home. Their wedding was celebrated afresh for 40 days and 40 nights, after which they went to the prince's kingdom. There he showed the dragon's ears and nose. As he had fulfilled his father's wish, he was elected padishah. Afterwards, Muhammad and his wife lived and reigned together in happiness until the end of their days. The end. I'm
Ooh, that was a long one. Not too long ago, a listener left a comment about how an Armenian story was also a Turkish story. And while now reading this, it was almost the same as Mirza from episode 199. It's really cool to see such an overlap, which you would expect from countries that influence each other. There are still plenty more stories in this book, and I look forward to reading more. And the podcast shout-out is to Lingthusiasm. Hosts Gretchen and Lauren go out of their way to make linguistic concepts easier for us lay folks to swallow. They also cover a lot of stuff that makes me go, why do we say that? And so if you like their podcast as much as I do, go and give them a like, a rating, and a review. And the listener shout-out is to Gaboron Botswana, named after Gosi Gaboron, or King Gaboron, a king of the Tlokwa people. There is evidence of people residing where the city stands, going back to around 400 BCE. During the early 19th century, there was a lot of upheaval and migration in the area. In 1966, it became only the 11th British dependency to become independent. It is on the very edge of Botswana and South Africa. It is a great place for seeing lots of beautiful wildlife. And so, I would love to visit. And to my listeners in Gaborone, I say, Kele Boga and Robala Sentele. Thank you, and good night.